Heads, and welcome to The League, exploring the League of Legends lore from A to Z. My name is Rebecca.
And I'm John.
And my name is Mark.
And today we are talking about...
Good start. We just talked about it.
I need her title. Fuck both of y'all. It was in last week's pen color, so it threw me off. Anyway, we're talking about Scorn of the Moon Diana. Also, it's not the Scorn of the Moon, just Scorn of the Moon Diana. She was released August 7th, 2012, and I'm not saying anything for the rest of the podcast.
It's just you and me today, John.
So, I guess before we even get into the bio, why do you think Scorn of the Moon?
Well, I think that has to do, and we can talk about it when we get into it. I think that has to do with her older lore, which I think has been kind of tweaked a bit to make her less scornful.
Yeah, it was her bio was not what I expected based on the title Scorn of the Moon. And also, like, I think the only thing I really knew is that she had a kind of feud with Leona, so I wasn't expecting the bio that we got.
Hmm.
Yeah, but Diana, she only has a bio and a short story on the universe page. An abundance of AUs, apparently.
Oh, yeah, nice.
We got some AUs. We got a few cinematics. She's mentioned in a few other people's bios and stories. So, you know, good stuff.
Neat.
Well, that's good. Because I wanted a lot more. That was my biggest complaint with Diana.
Yes.
Spoiler is that I felt she's massively underwritten, so hopefully the AUs help. I don't know.
I mean, they don't. You'll still have all the same questions you had, but you'll get other questions you didn't have added to the list.
I mean, we've talked a little bit about the Solari and the Lunari and their whole fight, and even with Aphelios, who was a newer champion, it felt like Riot just doesn't really give a shit about this conflict, and I definitely kept getting that feeling with this too, which was sad because reading Diana's lore actually made it kind of more interesting to me there. Feud and how Diana could potentially fix it, but they just don't seem to care.
Yeah, it's weird because they also decided, oh, Targon's gonna be a big Legends of Runeterra release, so we'll have Solari cards and Lunari cards, and it's like a whole thing. Like, this is your avenue for exploring the Runeterra lore, and they still don't seem to. I don't know. We can talk about it, but I think that they've decided they want the pieces on the board in a certain way, and they've decided to not do any of the groundwork, and they're just like, fuck the groundwork. We're not going to do any of that shit. I don't know.
So, who wants to pop off with the bio?
I can do it. I wrote summaries up beforehand for everything.
Oh, that's good. I didn't even know her name, so.
Yeah, okay. So, the bio, I couldn't find a credit for it. But Diana was an orphan. She was born to Outlanders, so people not from Mount Targon. They died, I guess, somewhere on the face of the mountain, froze to death. Bad times. But she was taken in by the Solari. She was kind of raised up in the faith, but she ended up being someone who regularly questioned the Solari faith, and it quickly transitioned from, oh, here's an inquisitive mind, to, oh, here's that fucking problem child, Diana. So she ended up becoming the target of, like, kind of regular punishment, I guess, from the Solari priests, you know, leaders, etc. And while she was kind of searching for answers, she would find that, oh, entire sections of this text are missing, or, you know, all references to the moon are gone. And because she was so... brash and questioning of the faith, she kind of became isolated from her peers, with the sole exception of Leona, who, while Diana was quite, you know, questioning of the faith, Leona was like the most devout of any of them, and they would have these long debates into the night, and while they never agreed, they did find a very deep friendship from it, you know. Now, one night, Diana is kind of exploring around, I guess, and she finds the ruins of, I guess, a Lunari temple. It doesn't say it explicitly, but it talks about carvings of showing the Lunari and silver-clad warriors alongside the Solari. And after finding it, she goes back and she tells Leona, and Leona's like, you need to fucking tamp that shit down. Do not tell anybody about that. But she can't sway Leona. God, I have my notes are even confusing Diana and Leona.
See, it's not me.
No. I ran into the same thing. Diana is not swayed, and she eventually decides that, well, the only way I'm going to get my answers is if I climb Mount Targon. Fuck. And John, I think you mentioned this when we talked about Targon a bit, that climbing Mount Targon is kind of like a massive deal, and anyone who does ends up kind of becoming like a chosen of the celestial aspects. Like, it's not just like, oh, I'll climb the mountain. It's like, no, once you've done that, you become something kind of ascended.
Yeah. And like, not all of them get chosen, but like, it is specifically said that if you do summit it, like, you are changed forever.
Oh, yeah, it's like you do. It's like ride or die, right? Either you do it or you're gonna die.
This isn't like a mountain in your backyard.
No,
this isn't your grandma's mountain.
This ain't your grandma's mountain.
Oh man! So Diana, she climbs a mountain. She does it. And upon reaching the summit, she's met with the brightest moon she's ever seen, and she's wrapped in moonlight, and she's like given all this new dope moon armor and the crescent blade. The crescent blade.
It's very dumb.
Loon armor.
Yeah, it's a little dumb. So she does that, and I guess we can easily suppose that she becomes the host of the aspect of the moon, which if we look at the Legends of Runeterra cards. I suppose this is the Silver Sister, because they have the Silver Sister and the Golden Sister, and one would assume that these are the actual aspects that we're talking about, rather than just the moon blatantly. Who knows, right?
This is the moon card.
Yeah, it's the moon card, right? One is my flying, and one moon. Has life, and one has a lifelink or whatever. Anyway, so she's gotten all aspected out, and she kind of looks around and she realizes that, oh, Leona followed me, and Leona has also become an aspect, specifically an aspect of the sun. And, you know, the two sort of reach a disagreement on how to proceed. Diana wants them to go down to the Solari leaders and kind of like, oh, we'll share this newfound info with them, and they'll totally be cool with it. And Leona is not on board with that. And, it comes to blows, actually. And if we look at Leona's lore, we find that Diana actually had the chance to, she got the better of Leona and had the chance to kill her and did not, but instead did end up returning to the Solari high priests, starts telling them what she's found, and they immediately brand her as a heretic. And in the face of all that, her rage and anger of all of this kind of builds up, and it's amplified by this aspect that she's suddenly become host to, and she kind of ends up, oops, all murders, accidentally kills.
What?
Kind of accidentally.
Is this in the bio? Well,
yeah,
I think so. Yeah. Well, we should talk about it, because
I read
this
bio,
is,
man. I was like 20% present, I guess.
Yeah. She ends up killing a bunch of Solari, right, in a burst of moonlight, and she flees, leaving many dead Solari in her wake, and that's kind of where the bio leaves us.
Not a good look.
No, it's not good for many reasons. I guess. Real quick, from Nami's lore, we do see that she is heading to Ionia, so that's kind of where Diana is at now, if we assume that Nami's lore is canon, which I don't
have
know if it
assume.
Is. Right, we have to assume for now. So that's kind of where she's at. She's heading towards Ionia. And then what we talked about with Aphelios' lore is that she is not in... she doesn't have her crescent blade anymore. And she is being pursued by some, at least, elements of the Lunari. So they're trying to find her. Whether it's hunting her or just trying to find her, who knows, right? But
everyone's looking for Diana.
Yeah. When Diana's not on screen, all the characters should be asking.
Scorn of the moon, Diana.
Weird. Yeah.
You both went in different directions simultaneously. It really fucked me up. But from Aphelios' lore, I had kind of gotten the impression that Diana was actively a part of the Lunari to the point where they knew her personally. But in her bio, there's no way she would have like gotten to know him, because she became Diana and then oops all murdered, as Mark eloquently put it, and then ran away. So do they just know this blade is part of an aspect?
It's a good question. It's hard to say, because I mean, we can look at Legends. We can, again, Legends of Runeterra. We can look at interactions between cards where she seems to interact and know various Lunari cards, but whether that's canon, whether that's, you know, just them putting in voice lines because, hey, we added this Lunari pack of cards, who the fuck knows, right? I mean, frankly, yeah. That was one of the big things I wanted, was an interaction. Like, in terms of story, I wanted an interaction with Diana and the Lunari as they are now, both to understand what that faith kind of looks like now, and also to understand kind of where Diana's at, because one would assume that she's the, like, she's the object of their faith at this point. She's the zenith of what the Lunari are looking at, right? And it would be really, it would inform a lot to see what those interactions are like, but we don't get that at all, so who knows?
Yeah, and I wish we had more info on timelines, too, especially about, like, the cinematics.
Yeah, that's another question.
Yeah, like, there clearly are interactions happening between Diana and Leona, like, on and around Targon, which she has fled from, but the bio kind of makes it seem that, like, she fled from Targon pretty quick after the Upsal murder, and there's kind of two separate interactions that the two are having. They're battling in one of them, and then there's kind of like the fake battle face-off in the other one. And in the Legend of Runeterra card, too, for Diana, like, the Diana and Leona card flavor text both kind of tease a fight that the two of them are about to head off to, and both of them are tailed by a large group of followers. So, I mean, at some point, Diana did amass a group of followers who were all reverent to her, so... Hmm. There's a lot of missing pieces here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you look at the card arts, I think the implication is supposed to be that what we see in the card arts is specifically the perspective of... So the depiction of Diana is from Leona's perspective and then vice versa. And it's kind of what we see in that Call
in
of the
Art of the Cards?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I think you're definitely on point that... I mean, we must assume that there was some time between the bio and her fleeing to Ionia. Again, I think that's why it calls into question, is that canon, right? Nami's probably not been touched in a while. Did she actually leave at this point? Did they just decide, fuck it, let's just keep her on Targon? Who knows, right?
And yeah. I feel like the short story... only raises more questions.
I mean, it certainly doesn't provide any answers.
Because it definitely just... Because this is another thing that Diana's apparently doing that we don't hear about anywhere else other than this short story.
Do you want to hit it real quick just to... And then we can talk about her as a whole.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of notes about it. I'll just kind of do the super, super high level. She's going through a forest, has some sort of crazy vision, fights what she refers to as terrors, but what we can probably assume are void monsters, defeats them using the power of the moon, and then seals what's kind of described as a rift between worlds, and then looks into the ocean and is like, yeah, there's another one down there. I'm gonna get you. And it's implied she's going to go seal that one.
So she's just...
She's fucking sealing void rifts.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the summary. It's a very short action piece. Credit to Graham McNeil. Not credited on the universe page, but the wiki got him. So good job, yeah. Wiki, once again.
I mean, obviously, I did not make it sound cool. It's like a combat scene. It was pretty cool. It reminded me a lot of like a Shannara-type combat scene. It was nice. Sure.
Yeah, it's a good action piece. I like the description of the void creatures in it. You know, it doesn't outright say it at the start, but I think you as a reader can easily infer it, and they've got a cool description in general, but it's not at all what I wanted, right? I trust that Diana is a cool action, you know, badass. There's a million other questions I have about the Lunari and the Solari and all these other things that you've established that this doesn't serve, which is the biggest problem.
Yeah,
they losted me. I was looking for answers, but they just gave me more questions.
Right.
That had nothing to do with the rest of the plot.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's a good point that I didn't kind of catch from it, is that she does, like you said, look towards the tides and down into the ocean and says, oh, there's another rift down there, which does tie her back into Nami, which is a neat detail that I completely missed when I was looking at it. So
I did actually, one of the other things I specifically liked about this story was kind of the description of the monsters as she was fighting them. They like evolved as they were fighting her, which was very cool and void-like.
God, there's more about the void in Diana's lore than any of the void monsters.
Seriously. And then, like, you know, Nami's got that bit of lore about Diana too, and Nami also has a lot of interaction with the void. Like, I feel like I learned way more about the void through Diana-related lore than I learned about Diana.
Yeah. Do we want to go over the Nami stuff real quick? I mean, I know we'll hit it when we get to Nami, but we're in the D's and she's in the N's.
Yeah, I mean, you might as well, because it does tie in pretty directly. And there's two. Actually, do you want to cover this one? Because I've got like a million AU, so I'm going to be talking for a while, and
sure,
people are probably going to get sick of this sultry voice. I
mean, oh, never.
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, the quick and dirty is that the Nami is a part of the Marai, which are the ocean dwelling. I mean, she's a mermaid, essentially, and that's what they are. They're called the Marai. She is the kind of, you know, they needed a leader, and she kind of stepped into the role of it. And the big deal with them and Diana is that they've got a darkness beneath them. Who knows what that is? And they would have an interaction with a landwalker where every, you know, roughly 100 years, the Marai would trade an abyssal pearl with a moonstone to help kind of keep the darkness at bay. And obviously, that latest trade has not occurred. And so Nami is out kind of searching for the landwalker who will give her the moonstone. And that's what leads us to kind of, like I mentioned, us learning that, oh, Diana has gone off to Ionia. So Nami's searching after Diana, and from that we learn that, oh, you know, she's gone off there, and they're trying to get this MacGuffin to block the void, right, that's affecting the Marai. And that's what we need to know around Diana anyway, I think.
Yeah, and it's specifically mentioned that Diana is, or not Diana specifically, but the aspect of the moon is the only one who can create that moonstone, which is why they need her specifically for this.
Yeah, it's not like a Feliosis shit where he can just manifest moonstone shit. It's like a very specific moonstone. They use that word a lot, I noticed, between these two.
It's kind of like True Ice.
Yeah.
Also, there's just a cool Nami comic.
Oh, and yeah, I looked at that shit. That shit's dope. We should definitely.
It's cool as hell. She has to go down to the deep. And unlike the other comics, this one scrolls down the entire way, which really gives you a kind of feeling of depth, which I thought was a very cool touch.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fun. When
Nami will
there.
Be a lot of fun, for sure. In this Diana episode.
Yeah, I think what made the conflict a little bit more interesting to me, because when we were reading Ophelios's lore, that's the first time I heard about the Solari and the Lunari, and I was like, what are you fighting over? This doesn't really make any sense. And I liked that Diana was like, what are you fighting about? This doesn't make any sense. And I connected with that deeply. And I like how she came to the conclusion that we shouldn't be fighting. This is ridiculous. And she kind of clearly wants to like join them together. So I'm curious how Ophelios would react to that, because he and his sister Elune, is that her name? They have dedicated literally their lives to, you know, the Lunari, and I think they're very committed to, I guess, defeating the Solari, or I'm not sure, survival. So I'd be interested to know how Ophelios would react to Diana being like, no, they're our besties. We gotta be friends with them. I don't know, but we didn't get any of that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we talked about this when we were talking about Ophelios, but I think that would, to me, be the way to handle this conflict, because we know from Ophelios' lore that the Lunari are on the upswing, right?
Yeah.
The heavens are shifting in their favor. And it would be, I think, the most narratively appropriate for them to kind of start acting similar to the Solari, where they are becoming zealots and they're becoming assholes, right? And so that puts Diana in a very interesting place where she's kind of a heretic in both camps, right? Preaching this, oh, we need to be, you know, friends and equality. Like, the Solari obviously are not fans. And then the Lunari, like Ophelios, those who are super dedicated to the cause, start to kind of take that same position of, well, I mean, we've been hounded for hundreds of years and brought to the brink of extinction. Fuck the Solari. We're going to fucking, you know, we're going to take our due. And I think that would be a really interesting way to handle that entire conflict, right? And put it, and that would explain why she's running. It would put Aphelios in a very interesting position, like you said, of not just, you know, looking for her, but kind of hunting her, right? In a way of, we need to, you know, silence her. That would be a great avenue for Elune to end up being more villainous, which I think she should be.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, you need to kill her. And, you know, it would be interesting. It would be very interesting. But
yeah. And it's a good story for Diana, for her conflict of trying to join these groups together, because she's the only one who's been a part of both, which I had no idea she was raised by the Solari. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just not playing with it. They're not playing in the space. There's so much space play to play.
Play with me.
Play in the space.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the entire conflict feels very underwritten. I think at the foundation to me is not well established, because, and this was the same complaint I had when we talked about Aphelios, is that I don't have a good understanding of, like, how do these two faiths interact with, I'm just an average fuck, right? I'm an average guy on Targon, and I'm a Solari, or I'm a Lunari. What does this faith answer for me about the core questions that a faith kind of answers, right? Like, what does the afterlife look like for these two faiths? What are the day-to-day tenets of how I should live my life? You know, a lot of these kind of baseline things that I want established for the religion as an organization and how it has its followers act to help inform this larger scale conflict is kind of what I want. And we don't have any of that.
Yeah, I will say, honestly, probably the biggest glimpse you get is in the Nami short story.
Yeah.
Wow, you really read all of Nami's shit, huh?
I did too. Like,
because she's looking for Diana, and she goes up on this just like normal kind of like fishing village type thing and is asking about her. And despite the fact that they're not, like, you know, the Solari soldiers, they are very clearly Solari zealots. Like, they're like, why do you want Diana? And they're like, is she a friend to you? And she's like, it was funny, the internal conflict. She was like, I don't know how to answer here. I don't know whether they like her or not, but surely they can't be enemies with the moon, right? So, like, yeah, she's a friend. And they're like, heretic! Like, the whole village just turns on her immediately. They, like, pull out their literal pitchforks.
Yeah.
They, like, light up their torches and...
Who would hate the moon?
Yeah, and so it's clearly, like, despite the fact that they are not, you know, priests and soldiers here, like, the Solari have radicalized, it seems like, a large portion of the inhabitants of Targon. I do like the little bit at the end of the story where the elder tells her about fire, and it's clearly a metaphor for the Solari. That was nice, because she had never seen fire before. And in their quest to hurt her, I guess, they accidentally set their town on fire and she put it out for them.
I love Nami.
And the elder there was like, and she was like, yeah, I don't know what that stuff was. And he was like, it's fire. We use it for protection, but sometimes it can be irrational.
Yeah.
I'm curious because I think what Mark was really bringing up is, like, I guess I can buy that they're a bit brainwashed, but what does being a Solari offer them? Because generally, like, a religion offers you something, and I don't feel like they're being offered anything except just be mean at the moon.
General protection, I guess. And I don't know what that means. Yeah. I guess if you live on the coldest place on the planet, maybe being besties with the sun might be appealing to you.
I guess that's fair. Is everyone in Targon religious to this extent, or are there just, like, some normal ass people? It's like just a baker, and he's like, I don't take sides.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I think you hit on it a bit again when we talked about Aphelios, where, you know, you kind of pointed out, John, that they've got this belief around various suns having died. And so this current sun is, like, this is the last one. You guys need to not fuck it up, right? You could get there. I think there and kind of what we looked at around the Darkin having been sealed away with the moon's power. And I think there are ways you could get to the current state of affairs. But again, the groundwork, in my opinion, hasn't been done. So the entire conflict feels underwritten, which it then, you know, extends to Diana and Leona, where it's like, I don't know. I don't understand these two fates, right? I don't know.
Yeah. And this leads us a bit to the cinematics, where if you were hoping for answers here, you're going to be disappointed because, again, only more questions.
Yeah.
Now, these were both, I believe, Legends of Runeterra cinematics, right?
You're talking about, like, yeah, Call of the Mountain and the Vaulted Road, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Vaulted Road, the general premise of this is, like, in the shadow of an approaching eclipse, a young Lunari scout escapes captivity with her Solari lover, and the two of them decide to turn their backs on Targon forever. And this shows the story of, I don't know if this is officially confirmed anywhere, but it's believed to be the story of the Lunari Shadestalker card and the Solari Soldier card from Legends of Runeterra.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this shit's canon.
Yeah. So they're trying to get to the top of Mount Targon, where there something good will happen. The eclipse will show a secret path, or will show the passage to safety and freedom. They're being chased by the Solari, and a few questions. Like, obviously it's an escaped prisoner, so maybe that's why they're chasing. I don't know why Leona's there. This seems a bit under her pay grade.
She's got to break up these lovers.
Right.
Yeah.
Nothing else going on right now.
Diana's also here, I guess, just kind of watching. When they finally catch up to them, a soldier shoots an arrow, and it hits the Lunari, and Diana gets real pissy and almost attacks, but then doesn't. Again, she's here, I guess. And then the couple ascend to the stars and become a constellation. So that was that one.
Wow, what a bummer.
Yeah, Leona and Diana share a look. And it seems like maybe they'll fight, but then they don't.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for a fight.
The queer baiting, though. Come on, give me that.
Star-crossed romance. Very happy about one of the AUs.
Yeah, I mean, that was a whole thing I wanted to talk about, is in canon, in the Runeterra Prime canon, do we assume that that's a romantic relationship? I would assume yes, from the way it's written.
Diana and Leona?
Yeah.
I mean, I would love it, but unless Riot explicitly says it, then
I mean, I'm they
not going to take that those weak
forever.
Breadcrumbs.
Right.
Yeah.
But I put in some specific quotes from one of the AUs.
You're talking about the Battle Queens, right?
Oh, I am.
Yeah. I know. I think I saw some, because I was looking at this, and I saw, like, Iron Stylus had written, like, yeah, that was the original intention. And then, obviously, they got the kibosh put on that shit.
So dumb. Come on, what year is it, Riot? Fucking grow up.
But, I mean,
Battle Queens is the most, like, recent event, too, so this is, it's pretty recent lore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, from the way it's written, I think that's the way we're supposed to, I say supposed to. It, to me, makes the most narrative sense, let's say, right? If we look at, say, like, Ash and Sejuani, that would be a weird one to turn into a romantic relationship. You know, they're, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Unless, like, and there's been no hints of it. Sure, that could be a great story, but it's just, it's not been, they've been painted more as sisters.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
As Diana and Leona really haven't. But unfortunately, even when you get really blunt, a lot of people like to just pretend they're just gal pals. So
they're roommates.
Yeah, with things like this, you have to really, like, expressly state this is the way it is. Which they have not done. So I, you know, it's not real.
Yeah.
I suppose that's fair.
We'll see if they
commit. This is just headcanon.
No, yeah. I do it too, because, you know, it's more fun.
Yeah, now the Call of the Mountain cinematic isn't specifically about Diana. She's just, she features in a part of it. and the part that she features in, Diana and Leona are in the middle of a big fight. Yeah, they're just kind of battling each other, and that's pretty much it.
Oh.
It's a short part of the cinematic, so you don't get a lot of it. You don't know who wins.
That's her foreplay.
That is the foreplay. But yeah, so those are the two cinematics that Diana's a part of. And she's also part of several AUs. So we talked about it before. Let's start with Battle Queens. This is a recent one. This is set in a world where champions reign as queens and participate in the coronation that determines the fate of their queendom. Once fractured by endless warfare, the collective queendoms of Elysia have realized the true nature of their world, that the magic holding their fantastical plane together is maintained only through conflict. They have thus allied through the unifying conflict of the Grand Coronation, though some alliances are beginning to show cracks. Now, this starts with the Battle Queen Diana lore, which is just exiled for heresy. Diana has assented to return to her queendom to save her people. Nothing else. She intends to use the coronation to prove her worth and force Io's elders to admit the truth of her beliefs, that the crest answers to the will of the nation, not its leaders.
There's like more detail put into this lore than the actual Lunari and Solari conflict.
Yeah, this is more really interesting.
And actually, depending on during the event, depending on which kind of person you, I guess, allied with or worked towards, you get like a different bit of lore.
Oh.
The Diana lore specifically was about how she returned to, you know, her home, and she bypassed the church's theocratic rituals around the crest. I guess they had like whole ceremonies and everything you're supposed to go through and all that, and she just kind of like walked up and grabbed the crest. And it glowed and reacted to her, which I assume is a good thing. That means she was chosen.
Or she died.
No. After she did that, Leona gifted her an alternate outfit, which she made for her.
Here's some new clothes, babe.
That combined accents of the Solari and Lunari colors.
Aww.
And that outfit is actually the prestige version. I think this might be the first time there's actually like separate lore for a prestige version of a skin, but
dope.
Here's a bit of the story that I clipped out of that you might find interesting. So Diana's gonna leave, essentially, and she says, "Come with me." Diana spoke impulsively, her fingers tangled in the rich fabric of Leona's gift. "Let them sort their mess out." "I swore an oath," Leona replied. Diana surveyed her and, reaching out one hand, closed the remaining distance between them. "So did I." Her fingers skimmed across Leona's pale cheek, and Leona closed her eyes at the touch.
Just gals being pals, man.
Roommates. And anyway, then the Battle Queen Diana Prestige Edition lore. After revealing the truth at her nomination ceremony, Diana will let nothing stand in her way. Clad in her new armor, as steely as her resolve, Diana intends to subdue the tournament's monsters and the power-hungry religious order that has stifled Eosia.
So she's gonna subdue Leona?
She's not a monster.
Oh. Guess it depends on who you ask.
Hmm. So that is the Battle Queen floor. She is also part of the Dragon Slayer AU. So this one actually, I knew that there were a bunch of Dragon Slayer skins. I was actually surprised at how much lore there was around the Dragon Slayer AU.
Oh. Yeah, I play them.
Yeah, because they're fun.
They're cute.
So the first wave of dragons, this is a multi-tier story. There was two waves of dragons. The first wave of dragons was led by Dragon Knight Mordekaiser and was originally defeated by Dragon Slayer Pantheon. And they used the scales of all the dragons that they killed to outfit a group of skilled Dragon Slayers. So when the second wave of dragons came, which was led by dragon sorceress Zyra,
woo, Zyra,
a.k.a. the Clear Queen of Blades knockoff, and was eventually defeated by Dragon Slayer Xin Zhao.
What's Queen of Blades?
That is the StarCraft
Oh, I actually
Kerrigan.
I have never played StarCraft in my life, and I know exactly who you're fucking talking about now that you said that.
Yeah, if you look at the two skins, this is some inspiration.
Yeah, a little bit of inspiration.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
So this universe encompasses the dragon trainer skins, who are champions that are characters that are trying to befriend the dragons. Dragon Master Swain, who started as a hunter, but was corrupted and enthralled by the dragons.
Corrupted, or maybe enchanted.
Enthralled. And Dragon Oracle Udyr, who's training to control the dragons and channel their power.
And Dragon Trainer Lulu.
Yeah, I said it encompasses the Dragon Trainer skins.
Yeah, but you didn't specify Lulu. And I love Lulu.
It's a very good one.
Thanks.
I think it's actually most of the Yordles. It's like Hymer, yeah. Lulu, and Tristana,
yeah.
I can think of.
That's funny.
So Dragon Slayer Diana is the skin that's part of this line. Legends tell of a special breed of dragons ravaging the countryside who can hide under the veil of nightshade. While other dragon slayers may think twice about challenging such dangerous foes, Diana dives in headfirst, her blade and armor forged from the very remains of these ghastly draconic beasts.
Eh.
Wow. All right. Well, you can't win them all.
Not impressed.
So, next skin line is Blood Moon. Now, much like Spirit Blossom, this is both an actual event in canon lore that is just a celebration that happens in Ionia, and an alternate universe set of skins.
Because Riot likes to get extra confusing.
Right.
So, this one features champions as Ionian demons or cult worshippers of the Blood Moon. So this is an ancient cult seeking irresistible power, surfacing on Knights of the Blood Moon to perform profane esoteric rites, merging their flesh with demonic spirits and becoming one with an ever greater darkness.
Ew.
Well, fine.
No, it's just, I wasn't expecting it to...
To merge flesh? Was
yeah,
that the bit that got
it? Yeah,
it
was merge flesh that got me. You're right. You know me so well.
Now, obviously, Blood Moon Diana is a skin that falls into this one. A child chosen by the Blood Moon itself, Diana's mind has been opened to the lost ways of the cult, unknown to its leaders and even the slavering demons beyond. Hers is a truth no one can know and a fated metamorphosis beyond men and the gods.
What about women?
Men and the gods. Next one is Infernal, which I honestly wasn't expecting lore for, but it turns
but
out there's lore for it.
It's your longest lore paragraph yet.
Oh, no, I just forgot to bold that fabulous one.
Oh, I see.
So this one is set in a setting. There we go. So this is in a setting where the Ashen Lord has been summoned and transformed the world into a land of ashes, cinder, and fire. Pyromancer cultists unwisely summoned the god of fire and ruin, who in this AU is Barellian Soul, into the world, hoping to control his power. Instead, he unleashed his infernal legions to remake all things in his image, cinder, ash, and death.
Oh my. Bran must be so excited.
Right. I actually don't think that Bran is part of this.
Wow. An infernal Bran wouldn't be that exciting.
That's true, I guess. Fire Bran! Can you believe it? Call the newspaper man. So these skins encompass all the infernal skins, anyone with infernal in front of their name. They also encompass those consumed by the infernals. So this includes Charred Maokai and Wildfire Zyra, and those from the Shadowfire Temple, which include Foxfire Ahri and Shadowfire Kindred, and the Protectors, of which there is just one, Obsidian Malphite.
Oh, weird.
This one also might be connected to the Glacial universe, just because, I mean, Glacial Malphite and Frozen Terror Nocturne are actually in Infernal Diana's splash art in the background.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah. So her lore for this one is, chief among the lesser Infernals, oof, is Diana, a blistering elemental terror sent ahead of the main invasion forces to assassinate key officials and set cities ablaze. Even her kin regard her methods as extreme. And she has been rightly elevated for it.
I forgot about this skin.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like the infernal ones as much, so I think I just kept forgetting that they existed.
Yeah, they were in TFT, so I saw a lot of them. Yeah. Next up is Fable. So this is set in a mythological world where each champion represents a mythological god, hero, a villain, or a creature. The Diana skin on this one is Dark Valkyrie Diana. So occasionally, a Valkyrie will be seduced by the comforts of mortal life and be cast out from the halls of Valhalla. Understandably, This makes them pretty upset with Valhalla's whole management style. And I didn't mention it the other week, but Cassiopeia is also part of this universe.
John, you're fired.
I know. So this is Siren Cassiopeia. I feel like all of these were pretty tongue-in-cheek, but a humanoid marine serpent known for luring sailors to their deaths, Cassiopeia has a bad reputation and wants to set the record straight. She'd need to stop turning interviewers to stone for that to work, but at least she's trying.
Oh my god, okay.
Oh my god.
All right, there's two more, and there's not a lot for either of them, so... She's part of Lunar Revel, and actually, Lunar Revel has a ton of lore associated with it, both in just kind of general lore and also individual champion lore. Despite that, there's no lore for Lunar Goddess Diana. She's just part of it.
Why? Diana's like, literally the moon.
She's like the only one with no blurb.
Oh, you mean this character who embodies the entire moon? She's there too. No important role, though.
Cool. Shit, right.
There's actually more lore for the Curse of the Drowned skin line. So this skin theme was initially released in conjunction with the Bilgewater Curse of the Drowned event, and the skin that's part of it is Dark Waters Diana. Diana was once an extremist within the Order of the Mother Serpent, but now spends her days murdering her employer's enemies by the light of the moon. In Bilgewater, it's less about who you were and more about the message you send.
Now, the Mother Serpent, really? is that in reference to Yowie's god, or is that a separate thing?
I don't know, actually.
I guess we'll find out when we get to Yowie, yeah. I suppose. Mm.
But that is all of the AUs that she's a part of. And unfortunately, we get way more lore from the AUs than we do from
We really do.
I love that we still get nothing on the lunar revel or whatever, the lunar goddess one. That's excellent.
I think that might have been her first skin, the one that was released with her. So maybe they just didn't have the backstory for it at the time.
Maybe. I feel like that camp. I want to say her Valkyrie was the release skin.
Oh, no, I think you're right. Yeah. I was just looking at them too.
Were they doing? I can't remember.
I don't play Diana much, so I don't know her skins very well.
Were they doing one or two skins when she released? Because I know they used to do two, and now they're down to one.
I think it would have just been one.
Oh, they're down to one now.
Okay. It's hard to say, but Dark Valkyrie seems like the release skin.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I was thinking, I had Dark Valkyrie in my head when I said Lunar Goddess, but I had the right splash art, just the wrong name.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Any more thoughts on Diana? I think it's just our typical lots of potential.
Yeah. So do we have any I haven't looked at her quotes necessarily, but I do, I guess, have a fun fact about her music. I think this was the first champion release that had an actual choral part to the champion theme, because it came out, I think, a few months before Vi, where they were experimenting with. That was at the time where I think it was still a very small team. I think it was mostly Christian Link at this point and a few others, but like experimenting with a lot of different like musical styles. And this was the first one where they had an actual person singing the theme as opposed to just being musical.
I remember you showing it to me because I don't think I was playing League yet at the time, or if I did, it wasn't very much, and you were very excited.
it was a very good theme, and the singer was a rioter. And here, I'm gonna look up her name because she's super talented.
I think she I know she was like a dev who was working on other parts of it, and they just got her to do this. I mean, this shit was a big deal, and that's a good call out. Was it like, I remember when this shit dropped and it was like, oh my god, they put lyrics in a login screen. Holy shit.
Yeah. It's funny to think about because it's just like they're constantly releasing music for this game that's not really tied to it. But there was a time when like maybe when a champion came out, they'd have their own kind of quirky song. But this was like a really big deal.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting to look at the lyrics to this song because, frankly, it speaks to her, the difference between her old lore and her new lore, where this old lore speaks much more to her, the scornful aspect of her, right? Where it's very It's very negative, I guess I would say, right?
Yeah, so what was her old lore? I don't know.
I didn't look at it. It was similar in that, you know, she was, you know, kind of parent, kind of an orphan brought up in the Solari faith. The big difference that I found was that instead of the murders being kind of an, oh, I just got angry and the moon's power kind of overtook me, it was like she got mad and instead kind of purposefully gave into her rage, like the rage of feeling. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in the VO where she's very angry. She's kind of edgelordy in a good way. Like, this is good edge, in my opinion.
Like Morgana.
Yeah. Like, she's very angry at being branded a heretic for so long, and is kind of giving in to the frustration of that. And I think that speaks to the, like, that's something we find a lot in the old lore. The new lore makes her much more of a clean individual, I guess I would say. I don't know.
They are doing that. I mean, they did that with Brand a little bit, too. They kind of backtracked. And Brand, I think they're even painting as more of a villain than Diana, but they're still kind of giving him a little bit of leeway of like, well, he's not that bad. Hang on. He burned down the village accidentally. It was an oopsie-daisy. Sure.
I don't know. I thought Brand was more well-crafted, I guess I would say.
Oh, definitely. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I will say, too, to Leona's credit, at least, when she got back and found that the temple, there was just like a ton of people massacred there, her first thought was like, I need to help Diana control her powers. So, you know, good on her. By the way, I looked it up. I think the best we're going to get, I'm sure the name is out there somewhere, but the best we might get right now is Sayaka. She was a graphic designer at the time.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's her Reddit name, so.
Any more thoughts? Any more Diana thoughts?
I find the Legends of the Vaulted Road cinematic to be fucking boring. It's I have it tied with Demacia as the worst of the Tales of Runeterra.
I'm very excited. I feel like I was not interested in Noxus before we did Darius, and at the moment I'm not really interested in Demacia, and I'm curious if getting into a champion will make the place more interesting to me, but I'm a little afraid it's not going to.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, maybe it'll be Silas that really gets you into, well, that won't, that's that so won't, that now. Won't attach you to Demacia. That'll probably detach you from Demacia.
That's fine.
It'll at least have a stronger connection.
Yeah, he'll be good. I guess we got, Fiora is probably the first one we're going to hit, right?
Garen.
If I'm thinking about it.
Oh, Fiora F before is Garen, before yeah. Garen.
I know.
Garen
who knows the alphabet,
God,
right?
So much.
Fiora is interesting, but she's kind of like a minor aspect. Like, she's kind of aside from all the mage magic shit, right?
Yeah.
From what I know. She doesn't need magic.
Yeah. But she's
while
cool.
You were practicing magic, she studied the blade.
You gotta do it in that voice, though.
But yeah, that's all I've got for Diana.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to learn more. If they release more Diana lore, I'll be all over it because
for sure.
I'm interested. Mm-hmm. I'm just, God, I have so many questions. There's no way they can answer all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely what I was left with, was a bunch of questions, wanting a million scenes to help flesh out. I guess a bright spot I did like from the flavor story, we saw a bit of her, like what it's, I guess she's the first aspect host that we've hit. Is that correct?
I like think so, because I'm confusing them with like the Ascended. They're all the fucking
yeah.
Same
shit. I think she's the first aspect.
Mm. Yeah, so I did like seeing the way that she kind of, in that story, the aspect was showing her past visions of like the forest, and it was kind of interesting to see the interaction, because that was a big question I had in general, was like, you know, what does it mean to be a host? Are you just, like, is your consciousness completely subverted? Is it like a 50-50 thing? And so the idea that
is it like an avatar?
Is it, you know, is it like Star Trek with the, God, what are they fucking called? I'm going to catch
Spock.
Fucking. No, not Spock, not the Vulcans. Fucking, it hurts me so bad. The symbiotes. It doesn't matter.
The Borg?
No, it's like DS9. What's her name? Fuck, it doesn't matter. In any case.
I'll cut this out so your wife doesn't divorce you.
Thank you. I fucking appreciate it. God, that fucking kills me. Anyway, like Dax, whatever. Trill, that's what they're fucking called. Thank you. I didn't just Google it.
Got it. Got it in one.
But it was interesting to see that, like, she mostly is in control, and then the aspect will kind of show her visions, and it's a very, I guess, symbiotic relationship where she's like, oh, thank you for showing me this, and it's not that, oh, she's just being, you know, direct, she's not, like, being puppeted around, right? The host just kind of suggests stuff, and she follows the intuition of it. So that was interesting to see, I guess. But again, questions. I want to see more of that. I want to understand what's it like to be a host to an aspect. That's a big fucking deal.
So. Yeah, that would be a much better flavor story. And I think it would go really well with Aphelios, who also kind of has that voice in his head. I mean, it's his sister, but there's like a higher being inside of his mind kind of controlling what he does while still having free will, but it's very manipulative. And I think having Diana have that similar thing, but maybe it's a more positive relationship. Maybe it's just as bad. I don't know. Explore that. Play with it. So much there.
Yeah, I mean, that again, I mean, like I said, like we talked about earlier, that those two and engaging with those two and their kind of weird dynamic, and that's a great aspect to try and contrast them as, like, here's one. Yeah, like you said, it would be great. I would love for them to give Diana some more.
Well, we can hope.
Someday.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, I think that's it for now, though, huh? Well, that was Diana. Thank you so much for listening. If you are enjoying the show, a review would be super helpful, or spreading it around in some way. We don't advertise, so word of mouth is really the only way we're going to have people listen to the podcast. It's been great, though. Yes, join us next week. I'm kind of pumped because this is going to get weird. We'll be able to talk about the Madman of Zaun, Dr. Mundo.
I'm so fucking pumped. Oh, my God. I can't wait.